Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Live one more time here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Sean, it has been a while, a lot of changes, a lot of things going on as we are getting to the heat of the summer, depending on where you're at. Maybe the Northern California area, maybe the Deep South, but oh no, not in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to this edition of On the Double with the Double S Express. And you are right, Sean Wally. It has been a while, man, and it's great to be back in the studios with you once again, man. And, you know, we're going to talk all things sports. And, man, we've got an interesting guest. I am so excited and looking forward to our guest today, man, because he has been a part of our lives for quite a while. Been in the industry, actually in the Pacific Northwest, for about 22 years or actually longer than that, man, 40 years in the business. And you know, he took a dabble in some in politics, so we're going to look into that as well, man. But, man, Sean, what's been going on with you?
Well, Sean, we've got time to talk about me later. Right now, we can get to that guest you were speaking of, and that is none other than Tony Ventrella. Tony, thanks for your time tonight.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your time. We all have about the same amount of time here, so let's go.
Well, Tony, man, it is a pleasure having you here on the Double again. And man, there's some great things that have been going on with you. I mean, just transitioning from one specific to the other. Of course, you're at the sports desk one day, and then you're moving and changing and going into the political realm. And then I believe that we're back in sports. Is that correct?
Well, not necessarily, but I did definitely dabble for about 90 days in the, you know, for a serious run for a congressional seat. And, of course, in this state, you have the primary August the 2nd, and that's what you battle for. But at some point, it's like a business. It's kind of like opening a small business. At some point, you need to see where you are, and if you're at a point where you either need to pump it up yourself or you're not going to get where you want to go, you got to cut your losses. And for lots of reasons, practical and personal, I decided, okay, this was a really good test. I tried it. This is not my cup of tea. And I like tea, by the way. But this was not something for me. It doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean other people can't or shouldn't do it. But it's just not for me. It's especially in this mood that the country's in now. Nobody wants to negotiate. Nobody wants to hear anybody else's point of view. I'm the kind of guy that'll sit down at a table with three people that disagree with me, and by the end of the night, we will at least respect each other's opinion. And I'm just not seeing enough of that. So that was out my way out, and I will get back into some sort of commentary, some kind of sport, and I'll continue motivational speaking. I'll do all the things I did before after learning a really, really good lesson, and I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I tried.
Now, Tony, of course, I had mentioned earlier, just before you came on, you've been with King 5 and Cairo 7 for 20-plus years. What made you make the transition to dabble into politics?
Well, I've always wanted to do that. It was an interesting thing for me. Because, I mean, I grew up back in the 60s when, you know, Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King and people that I felt were inspirational, who could maybe invoke some sort of positive changes in the world, and I've always followed that. Then I got into sportscasting and immediately looked at the positive side of every story, the funny side of every story. I never dabbled in the negative that much, the drug stories or the, you know, the player with the assault charges. I mean, I always covered it, but I never really went into that much because I didn't feel that people wanted to be depressed at night before going to bed. I thought they wanted to be entertained. And so, but then I got back in thinking about, okay, I've done sports for 25, 30, at this point, 40 years, really. and maybe I should get back in and serve the public in a political way. And like I said, I decided now, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'll keep doing it as a nonprofit, booster of some of the local nonprofits, Boys and Girls Clubs and all that. People can do a lot in their own community without being politicians. So, yeah, to answer your question, it was always an interest of mine, and I thought I'd give it a shot for that reason. I believe people should do that. They shouldn't stay in one place. They ought to at least try something, many things, really, while they're on Earth. You only have a certain number of years, and you got to give it a shot. So that's how I feel about it.
Tony Ventrella joining us here on The Double. And, Tony, what did you learn most that you take away from your experience in trying to see if a congressional run was right for you?
Well, I learned a lot of things. First of all, I learned how to do it and how not to do it. And if you're going to run for Congress, I'll give you a hint. You got to have some kind of background first, like maybe a local run, for city council or a state legislator, state senator, something along those lines to give yourself a little bit of the procedure. And you got to start early. And I couldn't because, and this is, I guess it sounds like an excuse, but I was working for the Seahawks full time last year. To start an effective congressional run, you need to start in October of the year before. That would have been last October. Well, we were in the middle of the season, and there's no way the team is going to let me suddenly start running for our office while being a member of the Seahawks staff. That's just not how that works. It can work in other occupations. If you're a car dealer or you're a lawyer or a doctor, you can run and still have your practice. But in the media and in professional sports, you cannot do both at the same time. So as a result, I waited to the end of the season, which frankly was too late. So I'm not blaming anybody except timing on this. So that's what I learned mostly. You got to time it right. You need to run in a district where you think you can win because that's pretty much part of it. And you got to raise a lot of money, which is one of the ugly sides of it, but that's just a fact of life. So I found all that out, and it's like going to the grocery store and looking through the chicken and deciding, you know what, this chicken doesn't look that good. I think I'll walk away. That's probably the worst analogy you've ever heard.
Tony, do you think you're walking away for good, putting that thought to bed, or maybe with better timing you might revisit this political aspiration you have?
No, I don't think I'll revisit it. I'll tell you what I might do, though. I might actually consider revisiting it as a consultant, for public speaking, which I've done my whole life. And I've seen an awful number of politicians out there who can't seem to express themselves without either insulting somebody or, going crazy at the podium. So maybe I'll do that. But no, I'm very, very excited about doing work with nonprofits. I'm involved in a lot of community theater. Heck, I got grandchildren in community theater. I'm big on boosting kids in that realm. I'll probably do some coaching. There's plenty of stuff I'll do, and politics is not one of those, not on the list. Again, it's good for a lot of people, not for me.
Tony Ventrella joining us here on The Double. And, Tony, you had mentioned that, one of the things that that helped you make your final decision was the fact that there is a lot of money that is involved, a lot of monetary exchanges of the hands. Now, of course, here in a big election, as we're looking right now, this is the Republican convention is going on right now, and the Democratic one will be next week. And we see the amount of money that is being raised, fundraised, and for these campaigns. Do you see that ever changing in the near future?
Well, I don't, and here's why. And there's a good argument on both sides of this. I happen to be one who believes in public funding of campaigns, but as soon as you mention public funding of anything, you're talking about tax. And the last thing people want to hear is another tax on something. However, I do think public funding of campaigns would be ideal because everyone would have an even playing field. You could have, for example, I know a couple of school teachers in school districts in the area, 35 years old, and that, part of their lives, very bright, very intelligent, very well-spoken. They can't afford to run for public office, but they'd make really good senators or congressmen or congresswomen, but they can't afford to run, or they don't know people that are wealthy. It shouldn't just be for people that can raise money or have money. That's my problem with it. However, it is America. It's free enterprise. And we do have free speech, and part of that free speech is putting your money wherever you want to put it. And so I can't fight that. That's a constitutional right. So it's a quandary, but I just hope that the voters are, and I know they are, the people that vote are intelligent enough to pick the candidates who really will do a good job. And if they don't do a good job, then vote them the heck out next time.
So, that's
no,
right.
I'm not going to call for sour grapes here. I'm not going to say that big money is all the problem. Apathy is a problem, too. If people don't vote, that's a big problem. So if everybody votes, everybody pays attention, the money maybe won't matter as much.
Well, I think you're on the right track, as far as getting involved in the local level. And, you know, we need enough good people, good guys such as yourself to be that conduit, if you will, for those of us who need, you know, a little bit of help in understanding the political process. So, I think you're definitely on the right track there.
Yeah, I'm a member of the Community Activities Council in the commission in the town I live in. And I'm involved with local politics, and then I go to the city council meetings. I'll speak up if there's a problem. And I think if more people, the funny thing is nobody ever comes to those meetings. If more people would follow through with that sort of stuff rather than just complaining in front of the television set, I think we have a lot more active society. Because we can vote, and that we have the freedom to vote in this country, and only 40% of us do, which is a crime. Look at all the countries where you can't vote. You have a dictatorship. You got no say at all. We have the freedom to vote, and we don't take it. And that's to me, that's a crime. I don't think you should be able to get your driver's license in America unless you register to vote, too.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I'll go one step further. You shouldn't be able to father a child unless you can register to vote first. How about that? That sounds like a dictatorship now.
Well, I mean, we just want it fair. And so if that's fair enough and the people love it, why not?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's how I feel about it. So anyway, I'm looking forward to, the upcoming football season. I'll probably do a little work with the Seahawks again. And I'll be involved Storm, the women's WNBA team. I'm a season ticket holder for that group. And, I'll just support our local teams. And my favorite thing is Little League Baseball. I'll be going to those games because they're free.
They're free. The players aren't paid. They're not holding out for a better contract. What a great way. The national pastime, Little League.
I'm glad you brought that up. We haven't found the scandalous Little League in America yet where the players are paid. But it wouldn't shock me if we'll come up with one of those pretty soon. We'll find a coach that's paying them off with free Dairy Queen or something. I guess they all do that, don't they?
Tony, you mentioned, you brought up that you go to city council meetings, and what's your take on what went down with the whole Seattle arena, the proposed Sonics arena that the city council voted down?
Well, the one thing you got to remember, the city council voted the Soto arena down, and that was unfortunate for Sonic fans for sure. But when you look at the overall economic picture in Seattle, I can see the other side of that. I can understand why the ports may have been affected. And, you know, Sonic fans are very passionate, and I don't blame them for that. I was a Sonic fan. I covered them for 25 years. And back in the day, I didn't quite get here when they won the 79 championship. I came 2 years later. But the point is, there's two sides to every story. I don't knock the council for doing that. They have to look after all the people, not just the fans. What I really wanted was a renovation of the entire Seattle Center, starting with a new key arena. But the problem with that is the NBA won't go to that. The NBA won't even consider that as an option. And I don't know why, but they won't. Apparently it's a parking thing or whatever. But Seattle Center hasn't been nice since the World's Fair. That was 50 years ago.
That's right. It definitely needs a major facelift.
Rebuild the whole thing, starting with Key Arena, and then put your NBA and NHL team there. So that's my the only other thing. Let me jump in for 1 second. The only thing that I think could happen is that it's going to end up in the suburbs. You're going to see it in Kent or in Bellevue or in Renton or something like that. But there'll be a hockey and an NBA team, but it's not going to be in Seattle.
And Tony, you mentioned you're a season ticket holder for the Seattle Storm, a team that does play in Key Arena. What a great night they had on Friday night with the retirement of Lauren Jackson's jersey, one of the better, if not top, players ever in the WNBA.
Yeah, I think she's right up there with Diana Taurasi and all that. There's a couple of greats in there, there's a lot of great players in there. And I do love women's basketball to begin with. I've covered it since the 70s in Indiana when it was as big as the boys' Final Four. They don't call it Hoosier Hysteria for nothing in Indiana. I went to a girls' Final Four game in 1977. There were 18,000 people at Butler Arena. Remember the movie Hoosiers? Did you see it?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was a
Hoosiers
great
was
movie.
Shot at, well, Hoosiers, the final game was shot at Butler Arena in Indiana, and that's where I went to. My first, it was a girls' Final Four, high school girls, and it was at Butler Arena in real life back in 77. They filled that place with 18,000 fans for girls' high school hoops. And I've been a fan of the women's game ever since. Obviously, I'm a fan of the men's game, too. But and plus, I'm a UConn fan because I'm from Connecticut. And heck, the Storm have a couple of UConn players. They got Sue Bird and of course, Brianna Stewart, and their big center as well, one of their centers.
Tony Ventrella joining us here on The Double. And, of course, Tony, we're talking about WNBA basketball. And, of course, on the ESPYs, one of the cries was that they wished that there was a little bit more attention pointed towards the WNBA, because it is a great game to watch if you actually take the time out to watch. And you mentioned being from Connecticut. Man, what a great venue in Connecticut, the Mohegan Sun, where the Connecticut Sun play. That is an awesome, awesome arena.
Yeah, it's a great venue, but they got a huge advantage. You got to remember, you know, when the UConn Huskies win 10 championships in the last 13 years under Gino Auriemma, and that's UConn Storrs, University of Connecticut, it's not too far from from the Mohegan Sun. And so those fans are all about the WNBA. They're all about basketball, and women's basketball in particular, in Connecticut. So many great players have come through that program, and many of them, Maya Moore and Taurasi and many others, are in the league right now. But I liked what Brianna Stewart said, but I also agree with critics of the game. If you're a men's NBA fan, it's just very difficult to get to like the WNBA because it is a slower game. I love it. I happen to be one that likes them both, but I'm not going to argue against somebody that can't buy into the women's game. That's just the way it is. You can't force people to watch something they don't want to watch. And if they're not watching it, then the networks aren't going to show it. And that's really kind of a problem with the WNBA now. And soccer was in that same boat for a long time. And now, of course, soccer's all over the airwaves, which is great for the Sounders and the Portland Timbers and all the teams. It's just a much more popular sport for the TV viewer than women's basketball is.
Yes, of course, soccer, the MLS soccer is taking the country by storm. I know here in Northern California, we are looking to get a team here in Sacramento in the next year or so, and it has caught the attention all around it, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, the other city that's trying to get a team is St. Louis. They've been trying like heck.
First year
I covered Sounders in 2009, I went to St. Louis for the draft. And we drafted a young man out of a Ohio school. Now, of course, his name is escaping me at this point. But then again, I also forgot where I parked my car in the parking lot, so that's not unusual. But I'll get to it in a second. But anyway, the point is, I remember the rallies in St. Louis for that team, and I'm sure Sacramento's going through the same. It's a very entertaining sport, and I hope Sacramento does get a team. They'd probably support it really well.
Yeah, well, as far as the council is, city council and the local governing is concerned, Kevin Johnson doing an incredible job, for one, keeping the Kings in Sacramento and now looking to get an MLS team here as well. There is a fervor and a spirit in Sacramento that is growing each day, for professional sports.
Yeah, and you guys still have this is really naive question. Do you have minor league baseball in Sacramento?
We sure do. As a matter of fact, the Tacoma Rainiers were in town last week. playing the Sacramento Rivercats. Now, the Rivercats were the Oakland A's affiliate, but just in the past couple of years, it has switched over to the Giants. And so I thought it was a lot better, Tony, when it was the Oakland A's affiliate, because at least the Rivercats were winning. You know, their farm system, meaning the Oakland A's, is second to none when it comes to pulling out talent. But now that it's with the Giants, I mean, there's still some decent talent, but not what it once was.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, there's a good market for, it must be AAA then, right?
Yes,
so they're in it's a good market for that. Tacoma's got the Tacoma Rainiers, of course, with the Mariners right up the road 30 miles. That's very handy. But I've always been attracted to minor league ball. Every place in the country I've gone, I try to find a minor league game. And just walk in, even if I don't know the teams. There's nothing better, in my opinion, than watching a baseball game, on a nice summer evening in a minor league ballpark. It's they have the giveaways, and they always have the mascot races and some guy spinning plates on a wooden stick. I mean, there's just great stuff going on.
Well, I tell you what, Tony, when you're in town, make sure that you look me up, and we will go. If it's baseball season, we will go to a Rivercats game, one of the best-looking stadium, AAA stadiums in the country. And as far as finances are concerned, they do a really good job in making money and generating revenue.
Well, that's cool, and I love that. I also love the name Rivercats, and I can't imagine. I'm going to look that logo up. I bet that's a cool logo, and I bet the uniforms are cool. So I have to check that out when I get home.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, staying on the topic of minor league baseball, Saturday night, Tony, I will be in Pasco running camera for SWX-TV as the Tri-City Dust Devils, a former baseball stop for one Russell Wilson. So that'll be fun getting some minor league baseball camera work in.
You know, it's funny. It's, the year after he left, maybe it was 2 years after he left, we did a 12 tour, CR 12 tour in Pasco. We were in a hotel, and they had the schedule for the local team. And son of a gun, if Russell Wilson's picture wasn't on the front of that schedule, even though he hadn't played for the team in 2 years. So they were still exploiting him for his one season there.
Marketing at its best, for sure. Tony, before we let you run and get to your evening, what is your take? The Seattle Seahawks, you've worked for them for a number of years and might dabble back with them here in 2016. Do you think they've gotten enough of the proper pieces back in place to return to dominance in the NFC West?
Well, I'll tell you, it's funny. Timing is everything, and my timing hasn't been that great. I mentioned I started my campaign too late. Maybe I shouldn't have started it at all. If I had stayed one more year, and part of this is tongue-in-cheek, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying the irony of this thing. So, number one, you got a team this year that I think is going to go to the Super Bowl again, and should be odds-on favorite to go to the Super Bowl before the season starts. Which, of course, doesn't mean anything. You still have to win. But the only question mark on this team is the offensive line, and with Tom Cable running that crew along with my good friend Pat Rhule, and the guys they brought in. From Feedy to Bradley Sewell, or Sowell, I mean Joey Hunt, to Marcus Webb, and then they got Britt, who's going to move over to center. Gilliam's going to left tackle. Lewis, Lewinsky. I mean, there's all kinds of talent. They just have to get good, and they will get good by the time the season starts. Then you have Russell Wilson, who last year proved that he's not only a get out of the pocket and make things happen quarterback. He is an in-the-pocket quarterback as well, throwing to some of the best receivers in the NFL, from obviously Jermaine Curse to my good friend Doug Baldwin, to Tyler Lockett, who had a great rookie year and will have an even better second year, to Jimmy Graham, who's healthy again. We got Thomas Rawls, who should be ready for training camp in that backfield. Christian Michael's going to challenge him for the spot. He'll probably be 1-2. The defense is as good as it's ever been. So this is an exciting year. So this is the 1 year, and now here's the worst part. They're traveling to three of my favorite cities, Boston to play the Patriots, New York to play the Jets, and Tampa, where my brother lives, to play the and Green Bay, my fourth favorite city. And, of course, I'm not with the team this year. So that's the timing is everything, guys. But it should be a great season.
We'll call that the Ventrella trifecta. How about that?
Yeah, let's hope so. I was fortunate enough to get a Super Bowl ring back in 13 when Mr. Allen gave everyone, all of us longtime employees, got a Super Bowl ring presented by the players. It was a great moment of my sports life. I'll tell you that. My wife has that ring now, locked up in a safe, and I gave it to her. I said, if anything happens to me, this is yours. So I have to watch out. I have to check my food once in a while to make sure this has not been spiked. No, I'm kidding. But it's great. It was a great honor and privilege to get that, and I'd love to the fans to see them get another shot at it this year.
Now, Tony, on Sunday, Ken Griffey Jr. will be in Cooperstown, enshrined in the Hall of Fame. Your thoughts on his illustrious career, which you covered a lot of it.
Yeah, I had a great time with Jr. And I'll tell you, he was great to my son. My son, Peter, is 40 years old now. But when Pete was 15, 14, 13, he'd come to me with me to the ballpark. And Griffey at the time, you know, he was kind of a wise guy. He didn't want to talk to the media. But he would always go and grab my son. He put his arm around my son, and he'd say, I'll talk to this guy, but I'm not talking to any of you. So I actually gave my son a microphone one night, and we put the camera on him, and we let him do the interview with Junior. And the rest of the media was just incensed because Junior wouldn't talk to them, but he would talk to my kid, which was and my son, Pete, never forgot that. And so Junior was one of my favorites, obviously one of the greatest players I ever saw. And for him to go into the Hall, I think, is super for the Mariners, the Northwest, and for the Griffey family, which, of course, is a baseball family. I'm glad he went in as a Mariner because that's where he had, his biggest years. So we got enough Yankees in there, and that's my hometown team. So it's good to get a Mariner in there.
Tony Ventrella, thanks so much for your time, your insight, and best of luck in your future endeavors. I know you're going to stay busy with local, meetings and, hey, Little League Baseball. What can be better?
Yeah, you do all you can. I'll tell you one thing. If you guys need a Ventrella for Congress T-shirt, I got about 30 of them in my garage that I can just let me know your size. I'll send you one.
Extra large. I would love to have one, Tony.
All right, listen, I second that.
Yes.
Text me your address and I'll get one to you.
Sure will.
Tony Ventrella, man, Sean and I both watched you as we were growing up in the Pacific Northwest, and great to get to know you and talk to you for another time here tonight on the Double.
Thank you, guys. Anytime.
There goes Tony Ventrella, a name most people know throughout the Puget Sound. And heck, possibly Connecticut, too, where apparently, Tony's from.
Man, I tell you, if you don't, I mean, again, 22 years of service between King 5 and Cairo 7, and always a friendly face to have, when you turn on sports. My younger years and just starting to understand, I used to wait for that time around 11:27, and I know my parents, thought I was asleep, but somewhere around 11:20, between 11:20 and 11:25, Tony would come on, and sometimes he was on in the afternoon. But I remember, just wanting to catch that 5 to 8 minutes of sports. But, of course, now sports is 24/7. But Tony always had the smile. And when he was with King 5, I remember at the end he would always put his hand up for the King 5. It was never a wave, but it was always the King 5, as showing that, hey, this is who I'm with, King 5. And, just a great, great gentleman, a great person. And, I look forward to him doing some great things, in the local level, as he was mentioning, in politics.
And, Sean, what Tony was touching on about how his memory of Griffey with his teenage son being the only one that Griffey would talk to on that given night. And those are the memories that Tony will never forget and his son will never forget.
But,
yes. Yes, it's great to cover the team and to report on teams and be on TV or maybe radio, but at the end of the day, they take that time and that memory with them wherever they go, and you can't put a dollar sign on that.
Well, maybe this, and we forgot to ask or didn't have the time to ask. could have talked with Tony for the whole hour, but asked where that propelled his son. Now, is his son still in broadcasting? Did that lead him to wanting to do sports? Where's his son at from doing an interview with Ken Griffey Jr.?
Not that I'm aware of, but I mean that it's possible, of course. I've only seen, you know, Tony will add his sons in a post or a picture with them or whatever on social media. But, you know, who knows? Maybe one or both of his kids did go into some form of broadcasting and follow in their father's footsteps.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely want to find that out. And of course, we have to get our information to Tony because I want my T-shirt, man. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk to you about a little more sports. Of course, you're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. Sean, so much happening, so many changes. We have a bright, brand new, and I mean brand new studio in Sela, Washington. If you know where that is, you're probably in the minority. But man, a lot of changes, a lot of moving and shaking parts. What's happening down there in the 916?
Well, you know, the same thing. I mean, we're just bringing nothing but sports. And, you know, we talked a little bit with Tony about it as far as MLS is concerned. Sacramento inching ever so close to landing that MLS team. And, of course, the Sacramento Republic doing their best to bring a great product on the field. They get a chance to have exhibition games against a lot of the Western Conference in the MLS. Of course, they play the Seattle Sounders 2, which is the, I guess it's something similar to a minor league team. And then, of course, the LA Galaxy and San Jose Earthquake, other teams like that, along with the teams that are actually in their league. So, you know, Bonnie Field is the place for soccer right now. That stadium seats about 18,000, and they fill it religiously every single game. And so, you know, the blueprint is ready, and we're looking forward to some great things along with the Golden One Center that will be opening this fall for the first game of the NBA season where the Sacramento Kings now preside.
So hopefully you can figure out a way to finagle, you know, maybe a press pass or two out of some of those events and get to those great venues and with those teams and have fun not only in the summer but into the fall as well.
Yeah, you know, right now this is a great place to be. Unfortunately, whenever you start to get things, meaning sports teams, sports complexes, you know, I've mentioned to you over and over on how giddy and excited I am about this new casino that's going to be built in Elk Grove, California, 13-story tall hotel along with shops, malls, and mentioned also with Tony, the Connecticut Sun, the Mohican Sun casino that seats roughly about 10,000. That is in the makings as well here for in Elk Grove for that casino, and that's going to be completed here in the next few years. But with all of that brings higher higher rates, higher cost of living. And so you're going to look at this part of Northern California turning into the Silicon Valley 2.0, I believe. And I'm not looking forward to that.
Sean, I wasn't aware there was room in the ceiling for this cost of living to be raised.
Yeah, it's already up there. Yeah, no doubt about it. But, you know, when you look at where San Francisco is, where the Bay Area is, San Francisco, Oakland, that whole area, man, it is at the top as far as the cost of living is concerned. It supersedes New York like nobody's business. I don't know how people live in the Bay. You're talking about one-bedroom apartments that are about 500 square feet that cost $3,500 to $4,000 a month. Now, think about that. What kind of jobs are out there to where people can actually live out there? And, of course, these very same people are going to the San Francisco Giants baseball games, the Golden State Warriors basketball games, and you name it. And so, you know, it's amazing how people get by and do what they do.
Well, obviously it's possible because there's a bazillion people that live in the Bay Area and into the Sacramento Valley, and goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, you're living it, so you tell me.
Yeah, you know, it takes a very steady hand, and it takes a lot of hustle, I can tell you that. You know, we would need a whole new show, a whole nother show to talk about the many occupations of one Sean Boyd. But, yeah, that's what it takes, man. So, you know, just keep your nose to the grindstone and plowing forward.
So we touched on it briefly with Tony Ventrella in the first half of the hour. Sunday, a momentous day in baseball history, Seattle baseball history. Ken Griffey Jr. will be going to Cooperstown in the Hall of Fame. Just an amazing career. Easily top two or three all-time center fielders in the game of baseball. And the Mariners have done an awesome thing. They have told Rick Riz, Edgar Martinez, trainer Rick Griffin, and even the radio producer who's been with the team for 30-some years that they all get Sunday off and get to go to Cooperstown.
You know, that is great because those are the staples in Seattle Mariners history, all those people you mentioned, with the exception of the late, great Dave Niehaus. I'm sure that Dave Niehaus is looking down and, you know, with a big smile for Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, his voice was synonymous with a lot of the heroics and highlights that Ken Griffey Jr. brought, actually the both of them brought into our living rooms. And so, yeah, it is a great occasion for Ken Griffey Jr. As Tony said, he going in as a Seattle Mariner and a great occasion for the Seattle Mariners.
Sean, what are your fondest memories of watching Griffey from 1989 through the offseason when he left for Cincinnati?
Well, you know, I didn't blame him when he left in the offseason to go to Cincinnati. We kind of knew that that was coming because, you know, of course, his father played for the Big Red Machine, King Griffey Sr. And, of course, it's always a dream for a young man to play on the same team with his dad or that his dad played for in his heyday. Of course, Ken Griffey Sr. getting the chance to play with his son in Seattle. And you're mentioning, you know, what are some of the highlights? That was one of them, to watch, you know, Ken Griffey Sr. knock one over the fence and then Jr. coming up right after that and clearing the fence as well against Anaheim. You know, I'd probably say one of the biggest highlights was, you know, that everybody remembers. We remember that refuse to lose season in 95. And, you know, Edgar Martinez knocking that base hit down to get down the left field line against the New York Yankees, and Junior rounding third with Dave Niehaus on the call. And, man, what a great, great time to be a Seattle Mariner. A great time for Ken Griffey Jr. to put his staple. And some would say that he was the staple for getting the new stadium done with what that is Safeco Field right now.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. The Mariners had 1 foot out the door. They were on their way to Tampa to play in that horrible dome that the Rays now have been playing in for too many years. And they were all but gone, but the state legislature, led by Slade Gordon back in the day, came through and found the funding to make Safeco Field happen. And had the refuse to lose Mariners in 95 not happened, there probably would be no baseball in Seattle to go along with no basketball.
You know, you think back and, you know, we, of course, having Tony on and talking politics, and you think back of the local government and city council on the things that they would tolerate. And we go back to that 95 season that catapulted things, and without the backing of the Seattle Seahawks as well, you know, that, you know, the clink would not exist. And, you know, the city government was okay with it then. And, you know, for the love of the Seattle Mariners and the Seahawks, but what do you think makes the Seattle Supersonics the stepchild after, especially after they were the only team in Seattle to bring a world championship to that fine city?
You know, it's just a microcosm of everything that is wrong in the political realm, and Tony Ventrella tried to speak on that. And for elected officials to have the power to, like a Greg Nichols, former Seattle mayor, who agreed to let Clay Bennett and the Sonics at the time leave because they paid off the Key Arena debt. Are you kidding me? You gave everything away, and there's been no team in Seattle since 2008, and everybody has suffered. Not only the fans, but you go to all of the employees of Key Arena, the employees in and around Seattle Center, all the restaurants and bars on Queen Anne, that now they've taken a major hit because 41 nights a year, they were guaranteed good revenue and they were guaranteed to be working that night because there was an usher needed, because there was a janitor needed, because there was a parking attendant needed, and now they need another way to find income to make ends meet.
You know what the irony is, and Tony mentioned this a little bit as well, is that Greg Nichols and city council elected to take the money to pay off Key Arena. But like Tony said, nothing has been done, you know, tremendously done to that area, the Seattle Center, Key Arena, since the World's Fair or since its inception in the late 50s. And, you know, I find that ironic because, you know, there's no debt. They have a chance to do something great with that area and to, you know, to make things right or catapult things better for an NBA franchise, but they don't want to do it. You know, and, you know, I all I can think of is Seattle and Sacramento, especially in the in recent years are going to forever be linked. For one, Mr. Chris Hansen, who's a Bay Area native who worked feverishly to try to get the Sacramento Kings team to Seattle. But, of course, as I had mentioned before, with Kevin Johnson, you know, he definitely was the catapult to a grassroots foundation on making sure that the NBA stayed in Seattle. And I can tell you this, Sean, there's a huge buzz that's going on in Sacramento. For all of our Seattle listeners or Pacific Northwest listeners that aren't really sure if an NBA franchise is really something that you need after having, you know, the Mariners and the Seahawks having, or at least the Seahawks having success. Man, this city is at an all-time high as far as optimism, as far as where they see themselves in the next 5 to 10 years, in understanding what type of revenue is going to be brought to the city of Sacramento because of having the Golden One Center. So much that they've doubled down on this whole MLS thing. And so, you know, I hurt for the city of Seattle for not, or the council, because it's not the fans. The city council I hurt for in Seattle because they just don't get it.
Well, Sean, moving on to teams that do exist and teams that are around, the Oakland Raiders, the Seattle Seahawks have training camp starting soon. The Seahawks have camp starting July 30th, and there are 13 practices open to the public at the VMAC, Virginia Mason Athletic Center. And, of course, all 13 of those practices already sold out.
Well, you know, the way the Seattle Seahawks work, I mean, they're a team that is at the top of the NFL, and they've had some strong success with being in the Super Bowl in two of the last 3 years. Of course, last year was that hiatus. Carolina Panthers were the dream team of the NFC. But the Seattle Seahawks believe, just like Tony was mentioning, they believe that they're a team that can get right back to being not just the top team in the NFC, but winning the Super Bowl.
That's exactly right. And they didn't lose that much in free agency. And, you know, they gained a lot in the draft and even unrestricted free agents, which is what John Schneider and Pete Carroll have done well to maintain not only camaraderie, but to acquire good talent is find those diamonds in the rough.
You know, and of course, as you're mentioning, all the Seahawks have to do is, you know, fill the holes. I mean, unfortunately, there are a few more holes in this past year than as of later, but you know, I believe that the Seahawks have done their due diligence in trying to fill those gaps. Of course, over here in Oakland, we are feeling a little bit nostalgic as well as the Raiders. Can you believe it? For the first time in a while, Sean Wally, they're looked on as being one of the favorites in the AFC West. Man, I'm so excited.
Does that mean, are you willing to put on this recording of this live broadcast that the Oakland Raiders will have a winning record in 2016, something that has not been done in a long time?
Man, I'm willing to put on the record that not only will the Oakland Raiders have a winning record, but that they will win the AFC West. It'll be close. And I believe that people are writing off the Denver Broncos too hastily. Of course, they've lost two of their quarterbacks, but I still believe that the Denver Broncos are strong enough defensively to do what they need to do in the AFC West. But on the same token, I just believe that one of the surprise teams, if not the surprise team, is Jack Del Rio's Oakland Raiders and the things that they have done in the offseason as far as draft picks. Everything over the past 3 years has been spot on as far as the development of their franchise. They have the quarterbacks coming back and Derek Carr with a little bit more experience, the running back in Latavius Murray. And of course, you know, they have a very strong receiver core. So the offense is where it needs to be. And let's keep in mind this. We already know that the Dallas Cowboys will be labeled as the number one offensive line every year because that's what they do. but they're talking about the Oakland Raiders having the second best offensive line. So if you can have that establishment between the trenches, between the tackles, you'll be able to run, you'll be able to have pass blocking, your offense will move more fluidly, and with the additions on defense, it allows your defense to gamble and make special plays, and that's where I believe the Oakland Raiders are this year. But it's just on paper right now. It remains to be seen, but I do believe that the Oakland Raiders are the best team in the AFC West.
Now, Sean, I guarantee you this much. When you see Bruce Irvin at linebacker, and if he's used properly, where he can run around, use his speed to get by the slower, larger offensive linemen, you will be giddy watching him make tackles and get to the quarterback.
Well, I mean, he is definitely what we needed. And, of course, you know, it's not a mystery on why he came to the Oakland Raiders with Ken Norton Jr. as the defensive coordinator. You have Bruce Irvin, who is an assassin, but you also have arguably one of the best pass rushers in the game coming off the other side in Khalil Mack. I mean, this is a devastating defense that is going to wreak havoc on any team that decides that they want to pass, or if they want to try to bully you in the middle. They, you know, the Raiders have that taken care of as well. And so, you know, this is going to be a fun year. Yeah, you know, and as I had mentioned, the buzz in Sacramento about the new arena with the Kings, there is also a strong, strong echo and a great feeling in the Bay, not just because of the Golden State Warriors, because that's a lot to be proud of also, but the resurgence of the Oakland Raiders. And it's going to be a fun year to watch these young guys go out on the field and prove their muster.
Well, those Warriors have a former Sonic adding to that already dangerous starting five. Kevin Durant, former Seattle Supersonic draft pick, played in Seattle 1 year, their final year in 07-08, has decided to sign with those Golden State Warriors, leaving the Oklahoma City Thunder in the rearview mirror. And KD has said it had nothing to do with Russell Westbrook.
Well, you know, I totally disagree with that, but I do want to say thank you, Lord, for the blessing of having KD come to the Golden State Warriors. Here's one of the things that I don't understand, because you hear a lot of negative as far as the Golden State Warriors are concerned, and, you know, KD coming to the Bay. You know, you hear a lot of people saying that, you know, this is a super team. This shouldn't happen. This can't happen. You know, this is nothing but a cheat team. I want us all to harken back. And I know, Sean, you being up in the Pacific Northwest, it's hard to follow NBA basketball, and I get that and I understand that. But I want our listeners to understand where the Warriors came from and how they came to be the team that they are today before KD. When you look at the draft of Klay Thompson from Washington State, they drafted him. That's a homegrown product. Before that, Steph Curry from Davidson, of course, they drafted him as well. They also drafted Draymond Green. So there's three players there, with the exception of Andre Iguodala, who came into free agency, which they thought he was on the decline in his career, which we find out that didn't happen. The Golden State Warriors have built their team exactly the way that you would want them to. And the reason why I say this, Sean, is I take offense to what Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, said, is that he didn't like this whole situation. And, you know, he kind of erred on the side that, you know, this was a team that was assembled as a cheat team and this isn't fair. Well, if it isn't fair, then I think that you should take away the draft, because that's where the Golden State Warriors players came from. It came from the draft. Now, if you look back on, you know, where the Miami Heat were, or you can go years back to where the Boston Celtics were, to where they had Paul Pierce. They had Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and they had Rajon Rondo. All four of those players, actually, they were called the Big Three, and then you add Rondo. Rondo, you know, became this super player. Actually, those three super players that they picked up all came from other teams. That's a cheat team. But when you look at the Golden State Warriors, when they are hand-picked draft picks, you can't say that. There's no way that you could say that. And so for Adam Silver to take that stance, it's ridiculous, you know, to penalize a team for drafting good players. That's my rant for the day.
And really, if it was against the rules or illegal in the league, it couldn't happen. If they were over the cap, it couldn't happen. So, yes, people didn't like the Miami Heat when LeBron went there. Similar story now with KD, although I don't hear the backlash and the reaction that I did when LeBron left his home of Cleveland. Yet, again, if they're not over the cap, being the salary cap, and they're doing everything right, there was no tampering, there was, you know, they weren't sending him gold bars every month for the last year, then everything is fine and they're playing within the rules, so be it. It's not anybody's fault that Durant didn't want to go to any other team, be it the Clippers, who Steve Ballmer did put a hard push in the Hamptons for Kevin Durant. But, you know, more power to him. If you can do it and it's within the rules, have at it.
Exactly. And even for LeBron James, because let's face it, I mean, you're talking about one of the greatest players to ever play. Even when he went to the teams that he went to, meaning to Miami and then back to Cleveland, there's a penalty for that, which means that if you're going to put three great players, assemble those players the way that you did with Bosh, Wade, and LeBron James, look at the rest of that team. I mean, they pieced together some players along the way. Like, they brought a Mike Miller over from Cleveland. He was on the decline in this season. They lucked up in Ray Allen because Ray Allen was, you know, wanted to play for a contender. But after that, you had league minimum players. We didn't even know who some of these players were. You know, even though Udonis Haslam wound up becoming a great player, Norris Cole did a Yuleman type of a job in Miami. But for the most part, we didn't know who these players were. So there is a downfall when the top of your team is pinnacle because you don't have enough money to pay for, you know, strong median players. And so, you know, I just don't understand where people get upset about this, you know, these dream teams that come together. I can tell you here that KD has taken a lot of flack from around the league just because he lost to the team that he's going to, meaning they lost, you know, a tough 7-game series to the Golden State Warriors. They were up 3-1. Golden State came back and won, and now he's joining forces with them. You know, I don't know if I blame him for that. Yeah, you know, in a world today, so if we were working in corporate and we work for a particular company, but then we wind up getting a bump by moving to going to another company, people would pat you on the back and say, congratulations for taking that bump up, you know, for increasing your lifestyle and finding a better position that's right for you. But we don't do that with NBA players. We don't do that with when Kevin Durant says, hey, this team is better. And, you know, as long as, you know, we can find a cohesion between all of us, then I think that that's better suited for me. We can't applaud that. I mean, I know that, you know, this past year has been devastating on us as a society, you know, from a political realm to a sports realm, but it's getting ridiculous. It's getting ridiculous on the sensitivity of our people in our society to where everything just seems to be negative and everything seems to be no, 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 no. You can't do this. You can't do that. Well, last I checked, the more somebody tells you no, it's all the more reason for them to make it a yes, man. And so I applaud KD for his decision. I look forward to the Golden State Warriors going to the finals for quite some time. It keeps me employed, so I'm happy about that.
Kevin Durant went to college at Texas. He has now spent way too many seasons and years in Oklahoma City. It may very well be he wants a change of scenery, a change of pace, the beauty that is the Bay Area. He didn't take the most money. He could have stayed with Oklahoma. He could have gone elsewhere for more money. So you can't get on him for that. Yes, he's probably going to the best team in the Western Conference. How are you going to fault him for that? As you were mentioning, do you not want to go to a top-notch employer, somebody with great results that's proven?
More importantly, somebody to a team to where the ball moves around. And that's one of the things that I wanted to talk with Tony about as far as the WNBA is concerned. You know, one of the reasons why it doesn't click as much is because, you know, those young ladies play fundamental basketball. It's not like, you know, they have people out there that can do 360 dunks or this, that, and the other. So they have to rely on talent and fundamental basketball. Well, guess what? Now in the NBA, you have teams like the San Antonio Spurs and the Golden State Warriors that exhibit that same brand of basketball. And wouldn't you know that people want to play for them? You know, Jermaine O'Neal, who's been retired for 2 years now, wanted to come back and play for the Golden State Warriors. Ray Allen, who's been retired for the same amount of time, says that he has gas in the tank and guess what? Wanted to play for the Golden State Warriors. You know, there's a benefit to having, you know, strong fundamentals and the ball moving around. KD left Oklahoma City because the ball was stagnant. It was constantly in Russell Westbrook's hands. And he was just tired of that brand of basketball. You know, the person that moves and sets picks and lays screens is the one that's going to get rewarded coming off of the picks and the screens. And that's going to give KD more shots. And, you know, you can be rest assured that Steph Curry doesn't mind taking a back seat to KD as long as they're winning championships. This is going to be a great team for years to come as long as they can stay within that salary cap.
And Sean, you mentioned Russell Westbrook, and I brought him up starting this topic. And there are those that think he's the greatest point guard in the league, and I don't deny he has talent. And, you know, there are those with a certain red, white, and blue basketball team that we've worked for that will argue that he's the greatest player and, you know, Westbrook's the man and this, that, and the other. But I've said from day one, when the Sonics drafted him, he was the final draft pick in the first round by the Seattle Supersonics before they were allowed to leave and move. Thank you, Mayor Greg Nichols. If I ever see him, he's getting a punch in the face. But Westbrook has been nothing but a ball hog his entire career. Go back to UCLA, watch the tape. You'll watch what he's done in the NBA. It's been nothing but all about him. And I understand he's had a lot of triple doubles, which means he will get assists. But guess what? You can't take every shot. You're not open all the time. Sometimes you get double teamed. You get trapped. You have to move the ball. You can't keep it 24/7. But still, he is an eye player. And look where it's gotten, the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I totally agree. And it was just a matter of time before karma hit in Oklahoma City. We all knew it was coming. You know, anybody who is a Seattle Supersonics fan knew that this day was coming. You know, our hearts beat a little bit faster as the Oklahoma City Thunder showed that they were a team to be reckoned with. But, you know, as I'd mentioned before, you know, with the Dallas Cowboys, and I joke with you about the Seattle Mariners, that OKC, they were an accident waiting to happen, and it happened. That karma hit them, and, you know, now look it. KD is gone. He's gone to the Golden State Warriors. Now they're looking at shopping around Russell Westbrook. There's a chance that both of those players will not don a Oklahoma City Thunder jersey ever again. Could you see that from after the way they were playing in the playoffs? Andre Iguodala was quoted as saying that the Oklahoma City Thunder was the best team in the playoffs. And they didn't get it done. And so, man, chalk this one up to karma. Chalk this one up to Clay Bennett thinking that he finally figured out the magic elixir of life. And then the carpet gets pulled up from under him. And boom, your franchise is in turmoil. Man, that's a great feeling.
And Sean, you look at what happened to Bennett's best friend and co-owner of the Sonics and Thunder. I mean, may he rest in peace. But now what's happening with Durant leaving and they're shopping Westbrook? He's your best player. Yeah, well, unless you can get the farm for him. But you would think they would be able to take the money that Durant's not going to be paid and go get good players. Because it is free agent time. There are still guys out there. But apparently they're just wanting to get rid of what's left that's of any quality on that roster.
Yeah, you know, and no general manager or president or owner wants to go through the R word, the rebuild. But it looks like they're in that type of a situation. So, you know, which is, man, it's a mystery because, again, just 1 month ago, they were a team that was vying for an NBA championship and was quoted as being the best team in the playoffs. So, you know, it's, you know, karma is a you-know-what, and that's happening to the Oklahoma City Thunder as we speak.
And everybody in Seattle smiles, raises a glass, and does not shed one tear when the Oklahoma City Thunder lose every year to the Golden State Warriors.
You know, it's similar to the Miami Dolphins. Every time a team, one of the undefeated teams, go late in the season and they take an L, the corks pop in celebration that their undefeated record, being the only undefeated team in the NFL in an NFL season, still exists. So does the feeling when the Oklahoma City Thunder get knocked out of the playoffs. The Seattle fans rejoice in jubilee because it just means, hey, we don't get a chance to see that spectacle happening in Oklahoma City, what should be happening in Seattle.
Well, Sean, you mentioned those Dolphins, and we have yet to mention that they have signed a running back with a name everybody knows. Adrian Foster has been signed by the Miami Dolphins, and he will be in Seattle week one as the Dolphins visit CenturyLink in September.
Yeah, you know, Arian Foster, he's gone through some very tough injuries, which is the reason why he was released from the Houston Texans. You know, we'll see if he has a little bit in the tank. You know, you're looking at the Miami Dolphins who, you know, desperately need some depth at the running back position. So, you know, it should be a good spot, a good landing spot for Arian. And I hope that, you know, he has a great season. He's a good guy, good young man all around.
And he was once thought that he was once going to be a Seattle Seahawk draft pick. And for whatever reason, that did not happen. And his history is with the Houston Texans.
Yeah. And so, you know, now leaving the Houston Texans with the Miami Dolphins, you know, we'll see if he can be one of those staples on their football team.
Sean, it's been fun to be back in the saddle. Another live show. And heck, hopefully next Monday we can make it two in a row. How crazy would that be?
Well, we're starting to get our stride back. Of course, making some adjustments in the realm of sports. And, you know, who knows where our future lies. But I can tell you one thing. It's always with the Double S Express. Special thanks to Tony Ventrella, formerly of King 5 and Cairo TV sports director and short-lived politician. So, you know, that was a great having him on the show tonight, Sean.
Always great to talk to Tony. He's got so much knowledge and insight on all things, not just sports, as we learned tonight. We talked more politics and what goes on in running for Congress and things of that nature than we ever have on this show. So definitely great to have Tony in our repertoire of guests, and we'll have him on in the future. And Sean, as we have talked about a little bit tonight, Ken Griffey Jr., arguably the best center fielder in the game, definitely the best center fielder of our generation, donning the Kingdome floor for many years from 1989 until he left after Safeco Field was built. And of course, he returned triumphantly at the 2010 season for a fond farewell. He and Ichiro, you remember those video images of Ichiro and Griffey being on their players' shoulders, carried off the field. Now that is another memory and image that people will never forget.
And no doubt about it, 116 win season. And man, it seemed like things were on the up and up then. But yeah, Ken Griffey Jr., a strong salute to a great, great baseball Hall of Famer.
For Sean Boyd down in Sacramento, I'm Sean Wally in the Pacific Northwest. We'll leave you with this amazing video that everybody will remember. It'll be audio, I should say, audio for everybody on this radio broadcast. The great Dave Niehaus, rest in peace, up in heaven, smiling down on Cooperstown on Sunday.
They would love a base hit into the gap, and they could win it with Junior speed, the stretch. And the 0-1 pitch on the way to Edgar Martinez, swung on the line down the left field line for a base hit. Here comes Joy. Here is Junior to third base. They're going to wave him in. The throw to the plate will be late. The Mariners are going to play for the American League Championship. I don't believe it. It just continues. My, oh, my. Edgar Martinez with a double. Ripped down the left field line, and they are going crazy at the Kingdom.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.